Hey everyone, welcome to episode 139 of the Live Free and Diet Hard podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Coates, always. And I have a fun one today. This one should be good. So Dan Goh and I have interacted on social media a little bit, but this is the first chance we've actually had to get that deeper conversation. I've known about Dan's media for a while, and I found digging in, your story resembles much my own. Kind of started a little bit later in our fitness careers, did the personal trainer route. We've got all sorts of mentors and successful people in the industry, like your Mike Izzertels, your Dr. Mike Izzertel, Dr. Lane Norton, Dr. This, Dr. That, you know, but you and I are trainers, off the floor trenches, the lessons of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you crushed, you absolutely thrived, you blew up with it. And then that leaned into a massive online brand, a large followings across multiple platforms, which is, we're going to get into big email list, all that stuff. So welcome to the show. It's really great to have you.
Thanks, man. Really stoked to be here. And it's just, we've been talking so much on social media and, you know, vibing with each other's stuff that it's just right that we got on this call together.
Awesome. So let's start here. Let's dive right into it. What separates the struggling personal trainer, the one that's one foot out of the industry, or even the one that's just complacent at the commercial gym? And I know there's people who enjoy the stability and the livelihood, if that is truly stable, because I've been in that world and it isn't, versus the person who embraces the larger brand, something else that has the biggest long-term earning potential. Mm. What separates that person mindset-wise or whatever?
The thing I would say mindset-wise is probably the idea of gratification. So especially when you're getting started on anything, whether it's like a business, whether it's social media or even a body, the launch is probably the most important part. And that's the part that gets a lot of people messed up, because you can be tweeting or, you know, posting into kind of like the ether and not really get anything back. And you and I know it's really just like committing to showing up every single day, stepping up to the plate, being in the arena, throwing whatever bombs that you have and, you know, putting the effort in. And the only commitment that you have to have is to be able to show up every single day. What trips up a lot of trainers is that they're very inconsistent with the way that they show up. And even if they're consistent for, say, like 3 weeks, what happens as a result is they're not getting the instant gratification of like whatever, you know, whatever engagement or whatever likes. And then that makes them stop. So one thing happens after another. After one day, they kind of like miss a day, then it turns into 2 days, then it turns into a week, and then they just altogether just give up on it. I really liken this to taking someone through, say, like a body transformation. You know for a fact that if you are showing up every single day and you're keeping that person accountable to showing up every single day, they will get the results that they want. They may not see it in the beginning, but after about 3 months, they're going to see some pretty significant change. And that's the only thing. You have to have the long-term mindset, especially with like, we're talking about media or even like talking about like business. You have to have the mindset of like, I'm going to show up every single day for the next year. I don't care what my results are going to be. I'm going to do the work. And then I'm also going to look for ways that I can improve. And then if I do these three things every single day for the next 365 days, I'm going to be way past where I am at this very juncture. So I would say that it sounds so simple, but the thing that's missing is their consistency. And the thing that's missing is just like having a long-term aspect on what they're doing and the actions that they're taking.
It's a flawless analogy for what we deal with our clients, because we're telling them the same bloody thing.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of coaches do struggle with this. When I first got serious about Instagram, this is what I did every day. Showed up. A lot of the stuff didn't get engaged with, but I kept showing up. It applied the same formula. So what has the larger brand and following allowed you to do in terms of income potential, for the opportunity, the doors that it's opened for you?
Yeah. So having a large following doesn't really mean a lot if you don't necessarily know how to monetize that following. Now, thankfully, I've had people that have coached me. I've went through various courses. Everything that I know is standing on the shoulders of giants that came before me. So the biggest thing that that I see with this, like my following that has just grown and grown and grown, has been a few things. Number one is obviously going to be income earning potential. You know, I basically went from, you know, being, let's say like a six figure online trainer to running a seven figure coaching business or online coaching business. And I've done that through the back of just like organic social media content. The other thing that I would say is also just like being able to like network with guys like you, being able to be connected to actually my old friends, like we were talking before, like guys like Luca Hochiva and, you know, and also like being able to network with other people. So, you know, right now, even on Twitter, like I've come across guys such as, let's just say like Bill Ackman, who's like one of the most successful investors on the planet, Shane Parrish from Farnham Street, Andrew Wilkinson from Tiny. Yeah. The Mental Model. Yes, absolutely. One of my favorite series, and countless authors. Like actually next, in about August 30th, I'm going to be doing a podcast with Michael Easter, who is the author of The Comfort Crisis. And that would not be possible if I did not have this following. And the other thing that I'm starting to see is the opportunities that come along with it. So, you know, when we think as like trainers, we're thinking about, okay, so how can we get more online clients? Even in my case, like I've kind of evolved to selling courses now as well, or a course. Now, the other thing that's starting to come my way is like opportunities with, say, partnering on products. We have this thing in the creator kind of like a field where it's the creator holdco, which you have like multiple different options to partner with brands, not necessarily from a sponsorship angle, although that can be that, but to partner with them to actually bring their brand, you know, up to relevance and to literally have an equity partnership with them. So, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, a lot of people are like, what's the point of like, you know, growing a big brand and all this kind of stuff. And if you don't want to do that, that's like totally cool. You don't have to do that. But for me, like one of my things is like, my impact or the impact I'm making on this world is by 2027, I want to be able to say that I changed the lives of a million people. I can't do that unless I am growing on social media and growing my newsletter and coming out with just things that change people's lives. So many opportunities that come from having a bigger audience. But that's the thing. It's like, you can see, you know, let's just say like right now, I think I have like 1.2, 1.3 million followers across like all social media channels. But that's what people see on the outside. They don't necessarily see me sitting in front of my freaking computer at 8 a.m., 7 days a week, creating content and doing that on a regular basis. So you know, that stuff doesn't happen by accident. It happens through just being consistent and showing up, doing the work, but also like networking with people like yourself, collabing, doing all this kind of stuff, seeing ways that you can increase the audience size.
It's unbelievable the cool people I've been able to get connected with. Michael Easter, you mentioned, just turned around and followed my Twitter one day, which I don't have a big following on. But the author, Brad Stolberg, who is also connected within that world, I shared one of his posts on my wall because I saw my friends at RP, Nick Shaw and Mike Isertel, were sharing it. And so I tagged Brad. And next thing you know, Brad and I get to talking. I've read two of his books. And all of a sudden follows me back. We've interacted a ton. He's been a guest on my podcast. I've introduced him to Luca and other, and Mike, and Jonathan Goodman in the industry, and they've gotten a lot of value out of it. So it's pulled Brad into the industry more. And I love being able to do that for other people. Brad's a great guy. And just texted me this morning because he's sending me an advanced copy of his next book coming out. So stuff like that is both personally meaningful, but incredibly high leverage. And a lot of what you said is a lot of what Alex Hormozi talks about, which is sort of, I like Alex's thoughts because they parallel with my own. This brand development, as long as you plan to use it, I use the word impact as well, because I think a lot of people get really plugged into the idea of the status. I really do think a lot of people are enamored with the idea of status. And it's usually people who don't have not done either, whether it's built along for media or the business success or something, or have, if they've done it, they haven't translated into the formula that social media kind of has, you know, is. You and I definitely play those games, but I've noticed there's resentment because they resent people who've achieved something that they think they want because they have a misunderstanding of exactly what it is. They don't understand how much time and effort goes into it And I think that a lot of time they want it for the wrong reasons, or they feel they're entitled to it is another one I notice a lot. They think that just because I've been a really good coach for a long time, you know, people should show up at my door.
And it is the practitioner, honestly, let's just call them that, the practitioner who looks at things that you post or looks at things that I post and is like, you know, what's this, like, who's this, like, maybe they'll call you, like, you know how people on social media be like, well, look at this idiot just, like, you know, posting, and, you know, he has no experience, but they don't realize, like, our experience is actually on the backs of, like, decades of work, right? This is the reason why we post in the first place. We have, like, a what we call a track record of just decades of helping people, helping clients, doing that kind of stuff. And I like to think about it like this as well. From the frame of, like, how many people do you want to help? If you want to help however many people in, like, your local area, right? Hundreds of people or hundreds of thousands of people, cool. Like, you can actually do that. You can own a gym and you can, like, you know, start up a gym and just help people that way. It just depends on what kind of impact that you want to make. And that's okay if you want to make that type of impact. For me and also for you, I would guess, is that we want to impact, like, as many people as humanly possible on this planet. And there just is no other way than getting your ideas out there and having them, you know, be tested, obviously, as a practitioner, but have them be tested out there when you put them out there into social media. And we also have to just keep in mind that, you know, probably, you know, I don't want to turn this into, like, a psychology thing, but most likely the things that we hate are the very same things that we want in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we just want to, like, pretend that we're hating them, right? So it's like the person who, the practitioner or trainer who hates on someone like yourself, who has, like, hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram and says, like, you know, it's bullshit. Like, how did you get your, you know, personal trainer certification? Literally, they're saying that because they probably want that stature, mm-hmm. most likely, right? And let's put it out there, like, growing on social media and having a big following, you gotta have like a fucking thick skin, okay? you absolutely have to be very confident in your own self. You have to be you have to actually be self-aware. You have to be introspective. Mm-hmm. You have to call yourself out when people say something and you're like, oh shit, you know what? Probably you're right on that one. I'm gonna say that, yes, you're right. And to be able to acknowledge that, like, people don't understand that, I guess you could say, like, the higher the audience grows or the bigger that it grows, the more that you actually have to be more kind of, like, confident in yourself, but not just from a false sense of confidence, not from an ignorant sense of confidence, but from a self-awareness type of confidence. So that's what people don't really understand. Like, when they see people who necessarily have, like, these huge followings, there's a lot of inner and outer work that goes into it. And it doesn't come from, like, us trying to, like, you know, post things that we don't have experience in. What they don't realize is that we actually have, like, experience with hundreds of clients, if not thousands of clients, and just, like, enormous amounts of years being put into this and putting our ideas to the fire, to the test of fire. And yeah, you know, personally for me, it's like, I can tell who's been in an industry for, like, a very long time. And I can tell someone who's just, like, dropping in and doing this for the first time and gaining a big following, because usually those people would actually go to the extremes of saying, like, a whole bunch of shit. And the people who have been at it for a very long time, they're saying, like, the principle-based things that just work on a regular basis. So yeah, that's my take on that. And if any trainers want to, like, you know, challenge me on that, that's great. but yeah.
I've got a few things that I've learned along the way. So a few rules, in a sense, with dealing with interactions on social media. First of all, 99.9%+ of the interactions are positive. And human nature, we are wired to embellish the negatives, right? We can forget about all the positive stuff. The positive stuff is worth it. So that's rule one. Rule two is, if someone is, like, differs, but they're respectful in the way that they do it, and they've earned the right to sort of challenge it, then I take them very seriously, right? Assume charitable intent. If someone is a total stranger, non-follower, comes in and is just a malicious troll, that's usually a restrict, block, gone. They don't have a seat at my table. I ignore them completely. Yeah. If there are people, I can think of a handful of examples, who never interact in any sort of positive way, but once in a while pop up only to participate in a negative interaction. So I deal with these people in a couple of ways. First of all, I will think critically on what they have to say. 100%, I will. But I also don't capitulate to someone who, because usually they're quite hostile, is what I found. Usually there's bombast and aggression. And there's a type of person in the industry, there are certain tribes that their game is to build status off of pulling other people down. And when I recognize status playing games within, usually they're extreme ideological echo chambers is where these people are. And they're very usually reasonably low status people who are trying to target higher status people.
Well, there's good faith and there's bad faith.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's good faith feedback, which is really cool. And then there's bad faith feedback where people just try to insult you based on kind of like the thing that you're putting out there. I invite good faith feedback. When it comes to the bad faith feedback, I kind of realize that they're probably not mature enough to be in that conversation right now. And also, like when we're talking about like people and playing status games as well, this is something that we see on social media. Sure, like one status game is to literally criticize someone else in order to boost you up, right? Another status game people play is playing like the don't do this exercise, do that exercise. This exercise is so crap, you shouldn't be like doing it at all. So you got to do like this one, and you know, and then it is when they kind of like go into these like extreme right or wrong, black and white, you know, types of thought. That is when we kind of like realize that there is, when you lack nuance, that also means that you lack experience as well. So yeah. And also like something that we realize, like being in this industry, is just like there's rarely a black and white, right or wrong answer to every single exercise, every single diet, every single way to do something. There is always a nuanced kind of like way of looking at it that is usually gray. And that's just something that we have to try to do whenever we're posting like social media. Even with like my posts and stuff, like I can just be kind of like very, you know, quick to the point with the actual image. But when it comes to the caption that I'm putting out there, that's when I kind of like outline the nuance. So yeah, there's many ways to do it. And really when I look at it, it's like, is this like good faith feedback? Is this bad faith feedback? If it's like good faith, then I'll entertain it and I'll actually interact with them. If it's bad faith, then mute and block are probably one of the best, you know, tools that are out there.
And there are people who will literally fixate and they will only pop up when they can. And usually whatever they're arguing about is a bit of a distortion anyway, they're usually reaching. I very deliberately approach social media with nuance, but I stay away from really polarizing or complicated things like that. And that way you don't invite the extremists anyway, because usually the extremists on the other side of any particular thing, if it's nutrition, you get like the most extreme end of say the vegan side, because not all vegans are the wild ones. And then you get the people who are just straight up carnivore type, who, or there's all sorts of different pockets with this stuff. I'm not interested in either antagonizing them, but I'm also not interested in attracting them as an audience either, because they tend to be a little bit more volatile. And that goes true of almost any evidence-based ideal or like socially ideological spectrum. I'm just not interested in playing those games. And I would just really, my mission is to help more people, like you said, right? And it's something that I mentioned Jason Phillips off air as someone I thought you'd want to know, because Jason, through his brand, Nutrition Coaching Institute, and his event Coaching Con, he says he wants to help 1 billion people, right? He's got a big ambition. And I mean, even in failing to do so, it's a classic, I can't even remember the quote, but it's like, you know, aiming for the stars and like, you know, all that sort of stuff. My brain is locking up right now, so I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. But you're basically, even if you aim incredibly high and you miss, you're still going to do incredible things versus aiming for the puddle in front of you. That's the essence of it.
I think and this goes along with like social media as well. One of the things that we have to understand is that our goals and the things that we achieve are literally limited by our thinking and what we think is possible for ourselves. If you set a cap at like, you know, let's just say like $100,000 a year or like 100,000 followers or whatever it is, then what you're doing is like you're setting a limit upon like what you feel is like realistic for yourself. Personally, for me, I'm like you. I want to set massive, massive goals, not only for the impact that they will have, but also for the type of person that I'm going to have to be in order to achieve these things. And something that I realized about every single goal that I've set, I always kind of like, I achieve the goal. And then what happens as a result is I look at myself and be like, I should have set a bigger fucking goal. Yeah, should have set a bigger one for my brain to attach itself to.
Are there any limiting beliefs? So you alluded to this. Yeah. Any more limiting beliefs that you think coaches get into? Because what you described with that was anchoring, right? We develop emotional anchors to things like earning potential, especially. And whenever someone starts to get to the high end of that anchor, then they'll either take the foot off the gas and gravitate back towards that mean that they're so emotionally used to. And vice versa, if they get off to a bit of a slow start, usually they'll step on it to reach that quote sales target. It shows up a lot in sales within organizations. So that one I believe is a big one, but anything else in terms of limiting beliefs that you think could be holding coaches back from, well, career development growth?
So when I think of limiting beliefs, I have to use myself as an example because I've dealt with a lot of these in my own life. There are a ton of limiting beliefs, and I'll throw one out there right now. So if you're watching this podcast, cool. If you're not watching this, I'm Chinese, actually Chinese born Filipino. I'm Asian. One of my biggest limiting beliefs was like, I'm Asian. Why would people want to listen to what I have to say? You know, wouldn't they want to listen to someone like, you know, like Andrew, who's Caucasian? And, you know, like that is, and also like as an Asian, it's like, we have this thing where we don't want to put ourselves out there. You know, we don't want to, you know, blow our horns too much. Actually, I was talking to my friend Todd Herman, and he was just like, you know, Dan, you literally are just like way too modest. You have way too much humility. And I honestly, I think those two things are amazing. But yes, like I don't necessarily blow it up out there to say that I've achieved this and I've achieved that and whatever. You know, I do like to keep things humble, but to a fault sometimes. So culturally, there's limiting beliefs around that, depending on like what culture that you're actually dealing with. The other one I would say is also environmentally. So you can only see what is around you. And when I think about limiting beliefs, it's like, well, guess what? If all of your friends, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but it's like, if all of your friends are like making, you know, 60K a year, and that's the only thing that you surround yourself with, and those are the only people you surround yourself with, then guess what? That could be the limit that you place upon yourself based on how much money you think is realistic for you to make. In terms of like, let's just say, you know, social media followings, like, If everyone doesn't have one, then what do you think is going to happen? So one of the things that I had to do in my own life was to leave the comfort and the confines of the environment that I was in and put myself in the seats and in places where I was literally like the dumbest, let's just say least rich person on the planet. Like, I remember hanging around Greg O'Gallagher or Kino Body, like as we know him right now. He's about to hit like a million followers on Instagram and YouTube and whatnot. He was kind of like my first example of like, oh shit, like you can actually get this big of a following if you kind of just like put out the thoughts and the experiences that you have. When I started to go to conferences, when I started to go to masterminds, I was put around people who were making, let's just say 100 times, 1,000 times more money than I ever was, right? And they kind of like hold up a mirror to the limits that you hold upon yourself. And for me, one of the things that I hold true in my life is that if someone else has like achieved something, then that makes it more realistic for me to achieve it as well. And that's actually the mantra that I had when I first started personal training. Cause like back then it was like, probably about like 20, 23 years ago, around then, that personal training and coaching and fitness was not what it was right now. There was no internet. There was no Instagram. There was no social media. So when you did, let's just say personal training, it was considered a side job. So when I decided to go into personal training, what happened as a result is like all of my friends and family were like, don't do that. Like, what are you doing? You're giving up this like cushy 9-to-5 job at a corporate, you know, whatever. and you're going to do this side hustle or this side job. And I was just like, okay, well, cool. Thanks for telling me this. I did the whole Michael Jordan thing where it's like, I took this personally and I used it as fire. And then for me, I went into like the new kind of like, you know, the new job of like being a personal trainer. I was like, how the fuck do I do this? Right. The only thing that drove me was the fact that I saw people that were successful at it in my own gym. And I was like, well, if that guy can do it, I can figure out how to do it. You know, if this guy can figure it out, then I can probably figure it out. We're all human. So I think that's where the self-limiting factors come from. Now, the way in which to break out of them is what we just talked about, which is like to put yourself in the environments where, let's just say, like being fit is a foregone conclusion. It's like a standard where making a certain amount of money, that's the standard. Where having, let's just say, like, or if you don't have people that have like a social media following and you want to be around people who are, you know, let's just say doing big things there, put yourself in the circles where they're doing it. And even if you have to pay for it, that's all cool. It's like, it's pay to play, baby. You know, it's like, like for me, I didn't have these friends before I started to invest in masterminds, conferences, and doing all this kind of stuff. I like put every dollar I had into getting into these things. And even back then at that time, I remember this guy, Bedros Koulian, and like Craig Ballantyne. They had this mastermind for online information products or whatever it is. And it costs like $13,000 to be in. And that was like 15 years ago, which was like a lot of money back then, like in terms of what I was making, but I did it and I bid it. And then after that, I came away with like lifelong friends who are still doing things to this day. And it wasn't until like putting myself into those environments and actually even paying to be in them where I got like the most benefit and broke through kind of like these little glass ceilings of like what I thought was possible.
You pay enough money for something, you take it very seriously. And it also speaks to, this is a different principle, but the coaches who are racing to the bottom, charging too little for their time. It's like, honestly, the more you charge, the more the people value it. I mean, again, Hormozy again talks about this a lot. And a lot of people are very scared and they'll automatically go to discounting or offering sales to increase, you know, their business whenever they feel threatened. It's like, honestly, no, increase your rates. First of all, your core good clients will support you in that. I have clients who tell me I need to increase my rates at points in the past. So that's a good endorsement. But two, when I increase my rates, I never had a client leave over price. And then when I'm sitting in front, first of all, I'm making more per hour. So therefore I'm doing better. So I feel less beholden to having to like, oh God, where's the next client coming from? Because every trainer throughout their career just feels that stress. What if all of my clients just suddenly up and leave in one shot, right? Like we all have feared that for a very long time, but it never happens that way. So I do think it's wise to gradually, at the very least, regularly increase your rates because it gets uncomfortable. You are also emotionally anchored to your old rate. So therefore there's a discomfort in you going up. Now, here's the thing. Let's say you increase your new client rate today by $5 or even $10 an hour, let's say. Well, first of all, you could say to your existing clients and say, listen, anybody new, you know, you guys refer me someone or whatever, their price is going up by $10, but I'm grandfathering you for the next 6 months to 12 months. As a thank you, you've been wonderful. I really appreciate you. So all of a sudden now they're getting a gift. They're getting a sale price and they're fine. And they also now are primed to know that that rate is going up in the future. And most of them are going to say they feel you're worth it and you're good anyway. So it's built in emotionally. They're comfortable when it comes around that time for renewal. It's a non-issue for them, not even a big deal. But the new client coming in is not anchored to your old price. They don't know it. Therefore, there's going to be no price objection because like, well, you know, hey, that was cheaper last week or last month. They don't know that, right? So simple little thing just to get everybody, I think everybody listening should probably take a very hard look at increasing your new client rate right now. It's going to be one of the best things you ever did. And if you get a little bit more financial grace, you're a little bit less stressed. Therefore, if a person sits in front of you and says, you know, there's a genuine price objection, you don't feel stressed and having to like pull that person in. You just realize, okay, maybe they're not a good fit and you can in good faith refer them to another coach that you trust who charges less.
Yeah. I would say every single year, a trainer should be increasing the rates every single year. And the reason the way they should be doing that, at least through that cadence, they can even do it every quarter, every month, like depending on what you feel comfortable with. The reason why you want to do that is because let's just say like, you know, imagine like there's a circle, right? And you put yourself in the middle. The circle is where you feel most comfortable in terms of like how much you're charging. Now, you can't go from, let's just say, charging $50 an hour to $100 an hour right off the bat, or you don't really want to because there is some like cognitive dissonance there. But let's just say like every single, we'll call it every single 6 months, you raise your rates by, let's just say like $5 to $10 or whatever it is. You do that enough times, then after about like 2 or 3 years, you're actually charging like double the amount. And the thing that people understand, or the thing that we understand from increasing our prices and from getting to a certain price, is that there is a lot of value placed on how much you charge, right? So let's just say like you're charging like $50 an hour. Well, guess what? You're going to be valued at $50 an hour, right? As opposed to someone that's like even like Ted Rice or even myself when I was doing training at the time. You know, we charge like $100 per hour. Well, guess what? Like, you are going to attract people who value you at $100 per hour. And also that's going to bring up your own value in terms of like how you see yourself. And the thing that we have to understand whenever it comes to price, this is actually, again, like one of the limiting beliefs that we have, like as coaches and as trainers, is that we get stuck to a certain price because we think that's what people can afford. And we also don't want to attract less people as a result of increasing that price. The thing I'll tell you right now is like both of those things are false. You will actually attract maybe a different type of person, but you will still attract the same, if not even like more clients at that price. If you are just like constantly growing, if you are constantly seeking growth and learning how to improve. And the other thing is that you're going to start valuing yourself and understanding that what you bring to the table is way more than what you're charging per hour. So yeah, like even in my own kind of like instance, like I went from, let's just say charging like, even for like online programs, I went from charging like $1,500, you know, per 12-week program right now. Now I'm charging, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 15,000, you know, sometimes for actual like online coaching programs. So it is all kind of like based on your own belief of like how much you should be charging. And I'll tell you right now, there really is no limit. As long as you're like, you have the stack of undeniable proof, you know, like Alex Hormozi says, which is like, you are constantly growing, you're getting results, you are constantly improving yourself, and you're adding more tools to your toolbox on an every month, every quarter, every year basis. And if you have that stack of undeniable proof, then you should actually have a price that constitutes that.
Two more things about increasing your price. One is, if you're making more money, you actually have more bandwidth to find ways to add more value. Yeah. You literally can make the experience more valuable. In addition to the fact that people will value it more because they're paying more for it. They got more skin in the game. And two, we say this all the time, but it is so true. The most price sensitive clients, the ones that will be the most unhappy about price increases, are invariably the ones that create most of your problems, are the most demanding, the ones that you tend to get caught in this loop of chasing around, struggling with. They don't want to be charged for missed sessions, all sorts of other crazy stuff. And when you get emotionally comfortable with letting those clients go, because they sap a lot of your energy and the other people around you feel it. It's the law of attraction. The shit is absolutely a true thing on an aggregate. If you can remove that in a professional way from your existence, it improves your mental energy. You project more positive, less stressed mental energy to all of your other clients, feel it, all the other people you interact with, and those people respond in kind. And again, it adds up to more referrals, better relationships, renewals, what have you. And I've had one specific juncture in my career where I really was ready to let some clients go who were just difficult to work with. They were not bad people, just it wasn't a good fit. And I felt better. And shortly thereafter, I had a large influx of clients, and I've been busy ever since. Mm. Before we run out of time,
yeah.
Now, if you have something else to add there, please do. But I was going to say,
like, definitely do like an audit of your calendar. And when you see your calendar, one of the things that you should be doing is marking off the things or the clients that give you energy as like green, and marking off the clients that take away energy as red. And do this on a regular basis. One of the things that you have to understand is that our brains have like a limited capacity. And the more that you kind of like get rid or fire the people who are kind of like just draining your energy, and the more it allows you to have the space to attract the people who give you energy or even put more time into those people. That just like the amount of stress that you just get rid of alone by doing that is enough for you to like seek out better people, seek out better quality people, raise your prices, charge higher prices, and do all that kinds of, even build your business. I think one of the things that a lot of trainers do is, especially in the beginning, they just take anyone and everyone. So what they have to do is like, as they have kind of like, you know, filled up their dance cards, so to speak, they have to get discerning about the type of person that they want to work with. And one of the best ways is look at your calendar and just see exactly which clients do you look at and be like, oh man, I can't wait to go train Susie. And which clients do you look at and be like, oh fuck, I gotta train Tom again. Damn it. And just use that as like a marker.
Michael Port's Book Yourself Solid, is especially the first about third of the book, is the best treatment on this specific topic I've ever seen. Every trainer should read that book. It is a brilliant resource for every trainer. So go get it. Message me if you want. I will tell you about it. Okay. With the limited amount of time we got left, I noticed like I have a keen eye for what's going on in the industry. It's impossible to keep track of everything, but I've been sharing some of your media for a very long time, and you at one point had no presence on Instagram, but you had built a very big following on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Then there was an inflection point where you ported it over to Instagram and very, very quickly blew up the following on Instagram. So were there any lessons from, I suppose, really important stuff that you feel like transcend both platforms, or anything that was very platform specific, Twitter versus Instagram, or any other lessons that you might say has to be individualized to any platform someone's on?
I would say I'll go broad and then I'll go specific first. So like the broad thing is that focus on one platform, get traction, have the amount of people that are following you somewhat like automated, so you can kind of like rely on, or you can successfully predict like how many people will be following you, and you have the content system and everything like that. That's all kind of like automated. And when I say automated, it just means that it's easy for you to do. You can show up and you can actually do it. And then focus on like one platform until you get it up to, let's just say, even like 100, 200K or whatever it is, and focus on that for however many years that it takes to get there. After you do that and you feel like those processes are automated, then that's when you jump onto the next platform. So I look at platform growth as the magnifying effect. So when I first started, I focused on Twitter. I had my magnifying glass on Twitter, and then I'm still to this day, still growing on Twitter, but I kind of like have the aspect of like creating for it and also growing on it. I'm not going to say automated, but it's just a steady growth in terms of like what I'm experiencing right now. After I've kind of like, I guess you could say, quote unquote, like figured out like Twitter, that's when I jumped onto Instagram and put my magnifying glass on that one. And the more that you kind of like put your focus and attention on, say, like a platform, that is what that platform is most likely going to grow. It's just like doing anything in life. So once I started to kind of like focus on Instagram, and found out kind of like, I look at social media as like game theory a little bit. It's like, or just like a game where it's like, okay, well, what are the rules to this game? What are the rules for growth for this game? What are the rules to get engagement on this game, right? And each platform has a different way in which you approach it. So for, let's just say like Twitter, you know, one of the things on Twitter is like, you know, I mean, now it's kind of evolved. Before it was threads. Now it's kind of like long form, past 300 word kind of post on there, you know, sometimes with a video or like with an image on it. That's kind of like one of the best ways that I know of right now to grow on Instagram. Before it was like carousels and like six carousel kind of like images and of like I wouldn't say random images, but just like of like, for me, that was my gain. It was kind of like the posting of like these philosophical kind of like lessons on, you know, getting in shape. For some people, it's like, you know, reels. Right. For some people, it's like reels, and that's what they do, and that's how they grow, whatever it is. Once you find out what the growth angle is on that one, then, you know, after Instagram, I focused on LinkedIn. And then after LinkedIn, I grew that to about, right now we're at 207,000 since like September 2022. And that's the thing. It's like you just find out what is the content angle? Like, what is the audience angle? What is the growth angle for each and every platform? But you can only do that when you kind of like point your magnifying glass on those specific platforms. Now, I can go like platform to platform specific right now in terms of like, you know, what I think works. I talked about Twitter. I think like, you know, Twitter, what it's like leaning towards right now is long form posts. I think threads are still kind of working right now, but long form, 300 to let's just say 400, 500 words with an image that constitutes like whatever that you're trying to talk about, or a video, even better. And let's like preface all of this by saying like, I hate creating for algorithms. I hate it. I like creating for the things that I want to create for. And at the same time, I use the algorithm as a guide, but you know how some people are like, I'm not growing on Instagram. The algorithm's like putting me down. No. The algorithm actually just like prioritizes whatever people want to see and whatever people spend the most time on. Right. So let's just say for like Instagram, to be honest, like Instagram is like you go viral and you get like 100,000 followers, like just off of going viral. But with Instagram, for me, the way in which I'm growing is like carousel posts for either a thread or a kind of like a lesson, a very short lesson, or a constitute, or kind of like a combination of lessons with a long caption. The long caption is important because that gives people the nuance and that allows people to come a little bit deeper into your world. Now, let's just say LinkedIn. Let me go back to Instagram. The way to kind of like grow on Instagram is actually to have like a bunch of people like share your stories on their stories, right?
Yep.
Share your posts on their stories. That's if you're trying to grow on Instagram. Like right now, I'm pointing people towards my newsletter, but I'm actually what I would do in the beginning is actually point people towards like sharing my stuff on stories, right? That's what I would do. That's probably like the best growth angle right there. Now with LinkedIn. What happens is it's kind of like the same with like Instagram, except like it only works with one image and a big caption behind it. And the thing with LinkedIn is like if people comment on your post, and the more people that comment, or even the more bigger people that comment, the more that post is going to get engagement and just fly, you know, throughout the LinkedIn verse. And this is all to say, you know, everything that I do in social media, every single platform that I am attacking at this very moment, every single platform that I'm growing on, all of this leads into just the newsletter. All right. Everything goes into the newsletter. And I don't treat the newsletter as like some internet marketer or whatever, where we like email people like 7 days a week trying to sell like a product or whatever, or email people multiple times a day or whatever it is. Like I don't do that. I treat it as a real newsletter, where people are going to just welcome my email coming into their email box. And I do that on Tuesdays and I do that on Fridays. On Tuesdays, I do like a deep dive on like something fitness related. On Fridays, I do kind of like a Tim Ferriss, like 5 Bullet Friday. Here's like, you know, three things and whatever it is. Now, the newsletter should be the area in which every single social media should be pointing towards the newsletter. And the reason I say that is because all on social media, that shit is not owned. Like you don't own that platform. You don't own your audience. The social media owns your audience, the whatever, the Instagram, the threads, the Twitters, like or X's right now, and LinkedIn. Yeah. Those people own your content. You don't own your content. And they can just as easily be like, you say one wrong thing or they make a mistake, you can get your account suspended, banned, and there are no customer service people that are going to be like helping you to get it back. There's rarely going to be one. So what you want is an owned audience. Every single thing that you do should be pointing towards not getting the instant gratification of a client or getting the instant gratification of a sale of like whatever it is. It should be pointed towards building your newsletter. And then the newsletter, you own that audience. You own the platform of which you are emailing these people. And also you're able to market to them and have them go deeper into your world on a regular basis. And you can be a welcome guest inside of their email box. I think every single person on social media should be building a newsletter. And if you're not building a newsletter, start building it right now, because that is where you're probably going to see the most sales, the most growth, And also the most people kind of like emailing you back and saying like, this stuff has like literally like changed my life.
I'm going to join your email newsletter because I just want to observe and learn lessons from it. So I'm going to say, everybody listening, if you're interested in more of this, because it can feel overwhelming, like most people listening are probably not going to have the bandwidth to go, well, I got to build on Instagram, I got to build on Twitter, I got to build on LinkedIn, TikTok, you name it, Threads. Start in one place, that's fine. But I think the idea of getting your email marketing stuff set up is a good idea. I was behind on it, but I still did it a long time ago compared. There are a lot of things you're doing really well that it's like, it's a direction for me to work within myself because there's a lot of opportunity for growth. Time, always a limitation. But I think instead of putting your head in the sand and pretending this stuff isn't something you can do now, I'd say lay the foundations for it. And I think go sign up for Dan's newsletter. You will learn about how it works. He's very good at this stuff. I am going to myself. And for everybody, where can they find you online?
Well, I have my website right now, which is like danfounder.com, but I'm actually turning that into dango.co pretty soon. So you can go to, hopefully within the next 2 weeks, the domain is going to change when this thing launches. And you can go to dango.co. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can see exactly like how I do things right there. I really do feel like every single online trainer or every single person who is a trainer, yourself included, should be building a brand for themselves, should be doing that stuff. And you know what, I'm going to be careful because with the word should, it's like, you're going to be shooting all over yourself. So I will say that, it is in probably your best interest to start building. And then the thing that I would do is probably start with social media, figure out that game, figure out how to grow on one platform. After that, you can start your newsletter. And then after that, you can start kind of magnifying your glass on different platforms or whatever it is. But if you just have a long vision and you just like take things like one at a time, then you'd be very surprised at like what you can accomplish.
Dan, thank you. You've been wonderful. Everybody listening, please go check out more of what he's doing. There's a lot of potential here. You may not feel you're ready yet, but you know, me and Dan both have been in this place where we didn't foresee where we would be. And that means that there are places what we will be in the future we can't necessarily foresee yet. So you're somewhere on the journey. This should give you a boost. Thank you so much, Dan. And everybody stay tuned for another great episode.